Hello, hello, and welcome to yet another episode. We're on episode 89. Wow, we're real close to the good old solid 100. My name is Michael Mosley, and I will once again be hosting this episode because Riley has done me a solid and has taken her day off and switched it with me so I can go to a convention next weekend. So thank you, Riley. How about you go ahead and introduce yourself?
No worries. Yeah, I'm just happy to be here with you yet again.
All right, so on a docket for today's episode, we're going to talk Stalker 2 getting delayed, Sony pulling the plug on PlayStation Now retail cards, and let's face it, with some of the rumors that's been going around, that's not too surprising, PUBG going free to play, mostly, and we weren't going to talk about it, but since, you know, it's still relatively new, you know, Twitter's still talking about it, I will take a moment of silence for the Xbox One, the original, not the Xbox One X and S. And we'll wrap up our show with a conversation about Dying Light 2 and asking when is a game too long. And we'll be bringing back an old segment. Huh, that's going to be fun. So our stories of the week, Stalker 2 has been delayed until December of 2022. This game has supposed to be coming out, was supposed to come out, what, last year?
I'm not sure. I don't know about that. The first time I heard about this game was at the Game Awards, but it's possible that it got delayed from last year, but I don't know.
Yeah, I know Stalker 2 has been in and out of the news a lot for like the past couple of years, so hey. But the developer has announced that Stalker 2 has been delayed from its original April 28th release date, which, let's face it, with all the games that's coming out, probably not that bad of a deal for the developers. Maybe using that as extra time would be a good thing. Now the game was released on December 8th. Oh, wow. Okay, so it's not going to be too close to Christmas time. So, hey, you still get your Stalker 2 fix. And words from the Stalker was, "We have made a decision to postpone the release of Stalker 2, Heart of Chernobyl, to December 8th, 2022. These additional 7 months of development are needed to fulfill our vision and achieve the desired state of the game. Stalker 2 is the biggest project in the history of GSC, and it requires thorough testing and polishing. We are convinced that development should take as long as necessary, especially in the case of such a project. This decision is not an easy one, but we are doing the best possible to deliver you a game that can live up to the expectations. With more information, updates, and showcases coming, we have an exciting and important year ahead. Thank you for your patience and understanding." Stalker 2, Heart of Chernobyl, had quite a bit of buzz coming out of E3 2021, and was set to be a game to look out for early 2022. So I was wrong. They were just talking about it in 2021. I thought the game was supposed to be out by now, so I was wrong. So, Riley, what are your thoughts on the game and being delayed?
Yeah, I'm always pro, you know, games being delayed. Because I just think like more time is always a good thing to get a game as polished and, you know, ready as possible. But I think the day that they're releasing it is kind of weird because from what I understand, at least the release calendar now, they kind of had their own sort of time of the year, right? I don't think much was coming out around April. So it looks like they had room to breathe and, around April, but this is getting delayed to December, and that's sort of like the end of the year when a lot of different stuff comes out. I mean, by the time this game comes out, we'll probably still be talking about Starfield, unless Starfield completely flops for some reason or is not, you know, living up to expectations. But, you know, other than that, I think it's a good idea always to, you know, just take that extra time to put that extra polish on a game. You know, I want to play a game that's as good and polished as it possibly can be. So I don't think it's such a huge deal, especially because it's just a few months.
Yeah, I agree. I'm always down for delays, especially when you know that, hey, we still have like a lot ahead of us. Instead of doing that whole release now, fix later mentality, it's good to see that GSC is saying, hey, we have time, we can delay it. Our game, we have confidence in it. The last game that got that big of a push, I believe, was Halo Infinite. That got a near year-long delay.
Yeah, basically a full year.
Yeah, and that game still kind of released half-assed. I mean, especially the multiplayer, there's so many game modes and stuff missing and basic Halo things like, I don't know, co-op. But, you know, yeah, that's the issue with live service games. You know, half-ass it now, release now, fix later, and put stuff in that was in the other games into the game and say that you're building value. So I am down for GSE taking the bullet and saying, hey, we need at least half a year to fix certain things. And I always respect when developers are like, well, instead of doing a week or a month or two, we'll give you guys half a year. We'll give you guys a year. We'll give you the necessary amount of time needed to ensure that you can deliver a solid product. So I agree. I am completely okay with games getting delayed.
Yeah, totally. I am excited to play this when it comes out. You know, I haven't played any of the Stalker games, but it looks kind of interesting. So I might check it out when it comes out. This is one of the games that I thought about putting on my list last week for my most anticipated games this year. So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I played Fear. I never played Stalker, but I heard Stalker was like a really good game. And I missed out on it. And I'm looking forward to Stalker 2. But I also got into Metro. So with Metro and Fear, I kind of didn't get into Stalker. But speaking of things getting pulled out of transactions. I screwed that one up. Anyway, Sony pulls PS Now retail cards. As reported by VentureBeat, Sony is pulling PlayStation Now cards from UK retailers. And I believe so far it's only the UK retailers for now. But this is important because with rumors and recent report from Bloomberg claiming that Sony is planning to merge PlayStation Plus and PlayStation Now into a new service akin to Xbox Game Pass, which I really hope they do. This service is under the working name of Spartacus. This is something that we've heard about, like a couple weeks ago, probably even last month. What do you make of all this, Riley? Based on what Bloomberg has stated about Spartacus, do you think PlayStation has a potential Game Pass service?
Yeah, I think something's got to be in the works. But from the things that I've been reading, I think in the VGC article, which we'll link, they mentioned that, you know, and I had heard this also as a rumor elsewhere that, you know, they are going to not have day one exclusives like Game Pass does, which is an interesting choice. The other thing that it kind of takes away from my excitement for this is they are going with sort of a weird subscription tier service. So, like, it rather than coming out with a whole new service, they're going to, like you said, mix PlayStation Plus and PlayStation Now into one service. But it comes with like a three-tiered system. So if you pay the base price, you get what you get now. Or these are the rumors. You get what you get now with PlayStation Plus. And then they have a step up from that where you get, you know, kind of like PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5 games, kind of like a Game Pass service, but for PlayStation games. And then there's another step up from that where you get PlayStation 1, 2, 3, as well as demos and some other stuff like that. So I think it's going to cause a lot of confusion, I feel like. I hope that they handle it elegantly, but it seems like because they're taking two services, which people know about, and making it a new thing, you know, that I think can cause some confusion. And the fact that they're not going to have PlayStation exclusives on their day one is kind of weird, but I'd be lying if I said that I wasn't at least a little bit excited for this, because like the whole reason that I wanted to buy an Xbox One X basically was to get Game Pass or a PC. But to be honest, I don't really have the money for an Xbox One X or, you know, a high-end gaming PC right now. So if I could get a service like Game Pass my PlayStation 5, which I already have, that's great. You know, one of my big goals for this year is playing more games, and if I can play more games by paying less money, I'm all for that, right? So we'll just have to see kind of how they handle it.
Yeah, no, that's well put. I've been able to play more games for less, and doing it legally, mind you, would be a great thing. Yeah, I love Game Pass, and I am excited that Spartacus is a thing. I hope it is true, you know. But games not coming to PlayStation 5 the day, I'm sorry, the Spartacus service day one. I hate to say it, but makes sense.
You think so?
Yeah, because PlayStation knows their player base, and they know they're excited for like the big high-end games like Horizon and God of War, and that they're willing to pre-order and put money down for that. So it makes sense that they wouldn't put some of their bigger hitters there, but they probably attract some of their smaller stuff. Especially with the PlayStation VR 2 coming out, this service could definitely be their thing to be like, hey, buy PSVR 2. PSVR games are going to be on the service. You know, that'll be enough to get people interested in PSVR 2 because it's like, oh, I have to buy this $300 to $500 headset and then the games. And on top of that, PlayStation has a backwards compatibility issue. Sony,
It does.
instead of allowing players to play their quote unquote legacy games, as people like to call them, you have to subscribe to PlayStation Now in order to play those old games, even if you have the disc. So
Well,
how so
for PlayStation 4 games, like, you can play a lot of PlayStation 4 games on PlayStation 5 just out of the gate. Some of them don't work, but a lot of them do. Because I have a whole library of PlayStation 4 games that, just work on my PlayStation 5. But,
Well, yeah, no, PlayStation 4 and 5, they have this cross thing going on because a lot of the older games that's doing multi-platform releases on both the last and current gen, you know, that makes sense that Sony will have a way to have PS4 games to play on there and upgrade the PS5 version.
Yeah, but you're talking older, right?
Yeah, I'm talking about like their PS3 games that people have been clamoring them to do again.
Yeah.
Like some people want to play the old Ratchet and Clank games, and I don't blame them. Cracking Time is awesome, and you know the Ratchet Clank Future series is just magnificent. I love it. But
Yeah,
some people, I'm sorry, go ahead.
sorry, I was just gonna say, I think from a technical perspective, it's a little bit challenging to get PlayStation 3 games working on the new hardware because the PlayStation 3 just had a completely different architecture to what the PlayStation 4 and 5 have, which has me a little bit worried that the solution for them to get PlayStation 3 games working on the PlayStation 5 is solely through streaming. And if they're mixing in the PlayStation Now service and they're going to use that technology for the streaming, I'm a little bit worried about that because, I have used PlayStation Now like once or twice, and it's not a very good platform. The technology just isn't really there. And I know a lot of it has to do with my own internet connection and things like that, but, I am a little bit worried about that aspect of it.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, America doesn't really have the best internet services, which is really weird and ironic for us, and how, you know, it's kind of the birthplace of all that. But hey, you know, you get greedy corporates who wants more but doing less. I recently tried playing Xbox Cloud on my iPhone. And I know I have an iPhone 12 Pro Max, so it's not like I got the XR or something that like, oh, you need a better phone in order to play this. And it is terrible. Absolutely terrible. And I was thinking like, maybe it's not cloud. Maybe the cloud just isn't ready. But then I play stuff like Amazon Luna on my phone and it works practically flawlessly unless I get too far from my router. And I'm like, so it does work. It is possible. I think it's a good idea when it works. And I keep telling myself I'm gonna try PlayStation Now because I do want to play some of those old PS3 games. Because I cannot find a PS3 controller for my PS3 that I have in my room. But yeah, I want to play some of those old games. And if cloud streaming is the only way to do it, a lot of people are gonna be wasting their money on the on PlayStation Now Plus service combination because they're not gonna be able to run it too well.
Yeah, to be fair, I think like the PlayStation 4 and eventually if they put PlayStation 5 games on like the second tier that we're talking about, I think those you'll be able to download. But just because of the technological differences between, you know, generations past PlayStation 4, so PlayStation 1, 2, and 3 are so different, I think either they're going to, you know, do a lot of work to push out an update to somehow get backwards compatibility working on the PlayStation 5, or they're just going to go the route and say, if you want to play these legacy games, you've got to stream them.
Yeah, I think they're going to stick with streaming, especially since they're teaming up with Microsoft and using Azure for their cloud-based services.
Yeah. And I wanted to go back to something that you said earlier, Michael, about PlayStation not putting their, you know, day one exclusives on this service. And I think what you're saying makes sense. And when you look at the reason why Microsoft is doing that is because they don't really care about the money that they're making from the games as much as they care about how much people are paying them for Game Pass, and also trying to get people into the entire Microsoft ecosystem. So, you know, trying to get them onto Windows 10 and onto Xbox and things like that, like any system. They're basically trying to group everybody into their ecosystem. Whereas PlayStation just has the PlayStation, right? They don't care about roping people into, you know, they want people into the PlayStation ecosystem, but they're not worried about roping people into a larger technological ecosystem, if that makes sense. Which is part of the reason that I'm worried that this is going to fail. Because if it's competing with Game Pass and they're not putting day one exclusives on it, then I don't think it's really a comparable service. I think it would be nice to be able to pay some money. You know, we'll have to see what the pricing structure is like, but I think it would be nice, depending on what they have on there, to be able to pay some money to get some free games. But, you know, it's all about what content is going to be on there. So we'll definitely have to see about that.
Yeah, it's going to get even harder for them because Ubisoft recently announced that Ubisoft Plus would be coming to Xbox. Yeah. Now, it's not coming to Xbox Game Pass. At least not yet.
And also, PlayStation doesn't have, like, nearly the same amount of development, like, developers. Just the sheer power of the development team that Xbox has been buying up. You know, they have Bethesda, which means likely whenever, you know, Elder Scrolls 6 comes out, that will be, I think it was announced just a few weeks ago that that's going to definitely be an Xbox exclusive, or it was heavily hinted at, and that game will probably be day one Game Pass. I mean, PlayStation can't compete with that. I mean, unless they put a, you know, in my view, unless they put their day one exclusives on there, and even then, you know, I don't think something like a Horizon Zero Dawn 2 can compete with, you know, day one having the next Elder Scrolls game, you know, but we'll see.
I mean, if they come out with another Killzone, just saying, Sony, people really want that Killzone.
Who would develop it in your mind?
Guerrilla. I would still have Guerrilla Games do it. I would not have anybody else. Yep, I would not have anybody else touch it but the original developers.
You'd take them off Horizon to do another Killzone?
Oh, no. Once they're done with Horizon, I would have them do another Killzone. Just a flex. Like, hey, we got franchises too. We have more than just Horizon. Or I let them risk a new IP. Because, I believe they recently have like a secondary studio. So Guerrilla Games isn't just like that one studio.
Yeah, I'm sure they could get another team to do another Killzone. I'm not a huge fan of the Killzone games, but I've only played, I think I played the one that was like a launch title for the PlayStation 4. But it was okay. I thought it was a competent shooter, but it wasn't exactly my favorite thing. But
yeah, it was definitely one of my favorites of the PlayStation 4 launch because it was gorgeous. I was able to show off what the PlayStation could do. And, you know, I did fall in love with Killzone after the second one. Killzone 1 was garbage. It was terrible. Oh, my goodness. But they really kicked it up with Killzone 2. And since then, I've been loving the franchise.
Nice.
All right. And speaking of killing, man, I am going to get this right one day.
The segues will come with time, Michael.
PUBG goes free to play, but ranked mode requires a one-time payment. Player Unknown Battleground, also known as PUBG, took the gaming industry by storm a few years ago, but with the releases of Fortnite, Apex Legends, and Call of Duty Warzone, PUBG has kind of taken the back seat in the Battle Royale scene. I mean, at least they did better than, what was it, Firestorm Battlefield? Oh boy. It seems like that may be changing because PUBG has officially went free to play. The free to play update comes with a small catch. To play ranked mode, you will need to buy Battlegrounds Plus for $12.99. It's important to note that this would be a one-time only purchase. It's not a monthly subscription, as Battlegrounds Plus also comes with a few other benefits, like 1,300 G coins, which I guess is ground coins. I don't know. Some accessories for your player and ability to create custom matches. So, Riley, what do you think of PUBG going free to play?
I think it's a necessary move. You know, like you were saying, almost nobody, like, PUBG doesn't get the mind share that it once did. PUBG was the first battle royale that I ever came in contact with. And it was a friend in college was playing it. And I was like, huh, what's that? And he's like, oh, it's this really cool new game called PUBG. And like, he had to explain to me like how a battle royale actually worked. And I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting, and didn't think about it. And then for a while, it seemed like that, you know, was going to be the number one kind of battle royale game, but it's faded in recent years. So, you know, I think it's a good thing. I just wanted to read out this tweet from Daniel Ahmad, who's an analyst in the gaming industry. He said, he tweeted out, PUBG hit 670k peak concurrent players on Steam today after going free to play. This is double its usual concurrent user figure in the past month. However, the game also received 13 times the usual number of negative reviews from people that previously paid or were annoyed by cheaters. I wonder if that amount of people that are coming in to play, you know, that's got to level off at some point, I think. I think a lot of people are coming in just because, you know, it's free. It's a new, like, big name free thing to play. And I don't think it's a huge deal that you have to pay, you have to pay $12.99 to play ranked mode. You know, that's pretty cheap. At least for me personally, like, I don't think ranked mode is completely necessary, but, you know, I'm sure some people want to do that. So, yeah, I think it's a good idea overall.
Yeah, it's definitely a smart move from the devs. Because with so many battle royales coming out and taking over, and being free to play is the biggest thing that's working out for them. Like, even Halo went free to play, which...
Yeah, that's insane.
Which I hate, but hey, that's for another time. But I played PUBG back in the past because I too had a buddy, my PC gaming buddy, who was big into PUBG. I was no good at it. And then I tried playing a few years afterwards, and I was okay at it. And I tried playing PUBG Mobile, and that's full of bots, so that doesn't really count. So getting more people into the original PUBG, the PC PUBG, by going free to play and only having a one-time charge, I think really is the best move that they can make to breathe some new life into this game.
For sure. I've actually never played it. Maybe I'll go play it now. Probably not, but maybe.
It's a little janky, especially if you play stuff like Apex and... Yeah. Warzone, it feels real dated.
Apex is really, really what got me into the Battle Royale genre. And I don't even play much of that, but if I'm going to play a Battle Royale, I'll play, you know, Apex, probably. 100% of the time.
PUBG's a little janky, at least the last time I played. And that's been about 3 years since I played. No, maybe two. Maybe two. 2 years since I played, and maybe it's gotten better. But we're going to talk about a story that Riley brought up before we started recording. Taking a moment of silence for the Xbox One. The Xbox One is officially discontinued. Microsoft has finally ceased productions on all Xbox One consoles. And if you were confused and you thought that, oh no, the Mandela effect, I thought they already did this. They did. They stopped producing the Xbox One S and One X almost 2 years ago, because Microsoft was releasing the Series S and X, and I guess they didn't want to confuse people, which makes sense, despite the dumb names they gave those systems. In a statement to The Verge, Senior Director of Xbox Console Production Marketing said this was done so Microsoft can focus on productions of the Xbox Series X and S consoles. The Xbox One certainly had a strange journey during its lifespan. It started off very murky with an abysmal E3 2013 showing. But over the year, the Xbox One would make quite the comeback with moves like backwards compatibility, Game Pass, and more. Riley, this is your story. What do you think about Xbox One finally in productions and you not going crazy and having the Mandela effect?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you said that they didn't want to confuse people, because this story confused the shit out of me. I did bring this up because it was on my dashboard, and I thought that it was kind of interesting and kind of a momentous thing, because mainly because I'm kind of surprised that, you know, it feels like, you know, new gen, next gen, this current gen is just came out, right? So I wouldn't have expected them to discontinue like last gen so quickly, but when I looked into it, all the articles were saying the Xbox One X and the One S had been delayed, and then you were telling me that no, it's now the news story is that the Xbox One is stopping production, stopping manufacturing, they're no longer making new ones. And I swear to God to you, Michael, like, I completely forgot that there was, like, just a regular Xbox One. Like, their naming convention is so confusing to me. There's the Xbox One, the Xbox One X, the Xbox One S, which are no longer in production, all of them now, and then the Xbox Series X and the Xbox Series S.
Microsoft's marketing team, really, either they don't care about naming things, or they're doing this on purpose so people will probably buy the S by accident. I don't know what they were thinking when they did stuff like this. Like, they started giving the S and stuff to their consoles back on the 360. Back when they did the 360 Slim. And I guess that's where the S came from. And now it's the X. And ugh.
And it's just like X and S sound similar when you say them.
They do.
That adds to the confusion. You know, Xbox, like, Microsoft has never really cared about their naming conventions. I think the best name that they came up with was Xbox from the original Xbox, which, if you don't know it, Xbox is short kind of for Direct Xbox. Direct X being the kind of graphics pipeline that they developed in the early 2000s for PC and for the Xbox. So that makes sense. And then they did Xbox 360, and everybody went, what the hell does 360 mean? Oh, well, it doesn't matter. And then they did Xbox One, and then you had to say, oh, no, not the first Xbox. This is Xbox One. So, you know, they've had a history of really bad naming, but pretty good consoles. So I will say that, like, I remember when Xbox One was announced and how much that was... They dropped the ball on that. They were saying that, you know, physical media wasn't going to be a thing. I think Don Matrick was out there saying, like, you know, get an internet connection if you want this thing. And then it was when, obviously, Phil Spencer, you know, became the head of Xbox that they started to turn things around. And I think by the end of the generation, really turned around the Xbox One.
Well, to add on to what you were saying, the 360, well, at first it was super confusing. Like, that makes no sense. It did kind of make sense because they did like a complete spin. Like, they looked at the Xbox, like, kind of like a 360 on what worked and what didn't. So eventually it made sense and
sure,
you just got used to it. But yeah, the Xbox One, it was so confusing that Microsoft had to retcon it and was like, no, the first one was the Xbox original. This one's Xbox One. It's like, good God. All right, man.
Yeah.
Cool story, bro. But yeah, I actually still have my 360. I still have my Xbox. And I don't have my Xbox One anymore. I used to have the original fat boy.
The big fat guy.
Yeah. But now I have the launch day Xbox One X. I mean, they had like the green little tint letterings on it, like day one or some crap. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was super excited for that and got that. But yeah, also don't forget, they really tried to push Kinect with the Xbox One.
Yeah, like, that's... I did forget about that, actually.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you can't use the Xbox One without Kinect. Like, why? Because we said so. There's no Switch. We can't just turn it off. That's the way it is now. And we're like, yeah, okay, well, I'll just buy a PlayStation 4.
Yeah. I think that really, like, the success of the PlayStation 4 could be traced all the way back to that E3. And, like, I remember, I think it was Shuhei Yoshida and, I feel terrible, I can't remember the other person's name, but who was in charge of something over at PlayStation at the time, and their E3, which they added last minute after Xbox did their E3, was like, this is how you share physical games, because Xbox One had this whole convoluted thing where, or this whole convoluted idea at the beginning where you could share, let me see if I remember this, you could share physical games, but you needed to tie it to a digital account or something. Really confusing. And in the E3 conference for the PlayStation 4, they were like, this is how you share PlayStation 4 games. And the one guy just handed the disc over to the other guy, and that was it. And the crowd erupted.
Yeah, that was great. Even I was like, yeah, that's how you do it. And yeah. I think I remember what you're talking about. It was like a family system. You had to have a small list of family and maybe even friends that you have on your digital account or something. And that was the only way you can, like, borrow games. It was really stupid. Microsoft was really slightly anti-consumer back then. And not to mention, the whole NSA thing happened. And so people became concerned about the Kinect because Microsoft was working with the FBI, with the NSA.
That's right.
With people's information and recordings and stuff. So, yeah, they really took a lot of heat with that Xbox One, original Xbox One presentation. Like, that was awful. Even I, someone who loved Xbox, even I was like, yeah, no, I'm getting a PlayStation 4. I'm not doing this. Like, sorry, you guys lost me. And when they finally announced that, hey, no, we're dropping Kinect, I was like, cool. It still came in a box, which I liked. I was like, cool, I don't have to buy the Kinect. It comes with the system. And I was able to use it. And I used to connect for like a little while, but yeah, nobody really took advantage of it.
Yeah, it's so nostalgic to look back at the start of last generation, because, you know, I remember like a bunch of media outlets and everything saying like, this is going to be the last console generation. Like, that was a huge, I mean, it might seem crazy today. And it does seem crazy today, but back then everybody thought that gaming was permanently going to go to PC. And that consoles would be faded out, which sort of makes sense if you think about it. But with, you know, the sales figures of, you know, last generation, with, you know, the PlayStation 4 and the Switch both selling astronomical amounts, I think I just saw, don't quote me on this, but I think the Switch just surpassed the Wii in terms of sales, and the Wii was one of the best-selling consoles of all time. And the PlayStation 4 is, you know, I think right behind it. And I think even the Xbox One, you know, had huge numbers as well. So that kind of squashed that idea.
The journalist saying like, this is going to be it. There's no need for consoles. Like, that's really weird. But the way that Xbox was doing things, and with Nintendo being Nintendo, you're kind of like, yeah, I could kind of see that.
At the time, it made sense. I mean, things were so different back then. Like, yeah. Nintendo was not looked at. I mean, they've always had their hardcore fans, but it was not, in my view, looked at the same way as Sony and Microsoft. And I feel like when the Switch came out, that's when, like, this is, forgive my pun, but that's when the Switch kind of happened, where it seemed like everybody started taking the Switch more seriously, and Nintendo more seriously. Again, you know, I mean, obviously they had their heyday back in like the 80s and 90s and early 2000s, but they lost their way for a while. So, you know, at the time it made sense, but yeah, it's just funny to think back on that.
Yeah, because you got to remember, before the Switch, I mean, we talked about the Wii. Before the Switch, there was the Wii U, and that was a colossal failure for Nintendo. So yeah, people were really starting to question Nintendo's, like, okay, you had the Wii, which was a surprise hit. Nobody thought it was gonna be like a big seller until we actually saw it. We're like, okay, this looks actually kind of cool. And everybody and their great grandmother was buying it up.
And that's, yeah, right.
Yeah, kids, back in the day, everybody had a Wii, and you could still find them. There was no scalpers taking them all. Not like today.
It deeply disturbs me that there might be people listening to this show that are too young to remember the Wii, really. And it also deeply disturbs me that the Wii is technically a retro console now, because it's 15 years old, What the hell?
Retro, man. It's
more than 15 years old, I think.
we're getting older.
I know.
But yeah, the Wii U was was the thing that made people go back and like, okay, maybe the Wii was a fluke. You know, maybe because after the GameCube, people were like, eh, whatever. So maybe that was just a one-time thing. And then the Switch came out and we finally saw it. It was like, okay, that's awesome. A handheld and a console in one. That pretty much re-sparked everybody to be like, okay, Nintendo is still innovative. They're still doing cool things. So so if anything, the Wii U was a fluke, thankfully.
Yeah, it was such a flop that I completely forgot about it.
you went from the Wii and all the way to the Switch.
That's right. And in my mind, that's how it happened.
I'm sure Nintendo wants the same thing.
Yeah. Going back to, you know, just my thoughts on the Xbox One, you know, it makes sense. They want to, you know, increase their manufacturing capacity solely for the new generation. And it totally makes sense because, you know, you can't get Xbox. I don't think you can get Xbox One X's very easily. I haven't really been on the lookout, but, you know, I know for a while that was a thing and you still can't find PlayStation 5. So it completely makes sense that they want to, you know, make as many as they possibly can and get the system, both of the systems, the Series X and S, into the hands of consumers.
Funny thing is, I went to a local Walmart and they had a case filled with Xbox Series S's.
Yeah, actually, I think it was the Verge article here, or maybe I can't remember. I'm so sorry, but I saw somewhere that, you know, the Xbox Series S is really not behind. You know, you can go find Xbox Series S's, like you're saying. It's really the Series X that is, you know, still lagging.
Yeah, man, I still want to get my hands on one.
Me too.
So, actually, Riley, what's the one game you remember just enjoying on the original Xbox One?
You know, it's funny. I never owned an Xbox One. But, really? Yeah, I was a PlayStation 4 girl all the way. So that was the console that I got when the system's released. I had no interest in the Xbox One at all because of all of the, you know, negative press around it at the time. All the things they said at E3 I hated. But I think, from what I remember, about the only game that I played on the Xbox One, because my uncle actually owned one, was Forza. And I'm not much of a racing person, but, you know, I thought that was a fun game. But that's, like, the only memory I have of the Xbox One is playing Forza. How about you?
Well, for me, it's definitely Halo. Halo 3 especially. Sure. That was a big thing for everybody, especially big parties. Everybody was super excited about the final chapter of Master Chief's journey. You know,
That was released on 360, was it not?
No, it was, but I was also playing on Xbox One.
Oh, gotcha.
yeah. Xbox One was so lackluster in the beginning that I was excited about the last gen game.
Yeah.
But people were still playing Halo 3 and its multiplayer on Xbox One.
Totally.
So like that was my big love for it. It was like, yeah, I could play Halo 3 on the next gen system. And that's kind of sad. Yeah. But eventually Microsoft, yeah, they turned things around.
So I guess they absolutely did, to the point where, you know, this generation, they're kind of the system that I'm looking at that's like, hey, you got lots of nice exclusives over there. Where in the Xbox One days, you know, especially early on, it wasn't really like that. It was like, well, do you like Gears of War? Do you like Forza? You know, things like that.
Yeah, you either had Halo, Forza, or Gears.
Yeah, that's kind of it. Congratulations. Those were like the big things.
Yeah, congratulations, you have those. Like, forget Blinks, forget Blue Dragon, forget Lost Odyssey. You know, forget Voodoo Vents. Forget all those things that Microsoft like really pushed forward in the 360 and Xbox original Xbox days. Like, yeah. Back then, they were pushing for new games, IPs, and then with the Xbox One, it kind of, like, rested on their morals and were like, yeah, we got Halo.
Yeah.
All right, so on to our main topic. How long does it take to beat Dying Light 2 exactly? Oh, man, this was all over Twitter. This was gunking up my timeline for a good while. So Dying Light 2 has been in the thick of it late due to a tweet from the game's official Twitter account that said that it can take up to at least 500 hours to fully complete Dying Light 2. Some people thought that it was too much for just one game, and Techland had to clarify things. They had to do it in multiple tweets. Like, people weren't satisfied with just one. Techland said that we wanted to clarify our recent communications about the amount of hours required to complete the game. Dying Light 2 Stay Human is designed for players with different gameplay styles and preferences to explore the world how they see fit. And then they released this nifty graphic, I will admit, I really like it, that showed that it's 20 hours needed to complete the main story, 80 hours needed to finish the main story and all the side quests, and then 500 hours if you want to do all of that, if you want to max out the game with all the main quests, side quests, the choices and endings, and checking every place on the map, every dialogue, and finding every collectible. Man, we're only a few short weeks away from release Dying Light 2 Stay Human. Riley, are you still hyped for this game? Like, does all this make you feel like, oh yeah, I'm getting a bang for my buck?
Sure. So I'm not exactly excited for Dying Light 2. You know, I didn't play the first one, and I'm not super, you know, like, this wasn't a game that I've been, like, hyped up about in my mind. But I do think it's interesting that the amount of backlash that Techland got on Twitter for saying that, like, hey, if you want to fully complete everything, it's going to take you 500 hours. It's interesting to me, the backlash to that, because, first of all, nobody's saying that you have to play 500 hours of this game. And I think there's sort of a problem. I wrote a whole Twitter thing about this, a whole Twitter thread about this, but I think there's sort of an issue in the game industry where people who play games and people like us who talk about games on podcasts often feel like they have to see everything in a game in order to have a competent opinion about it. But I just don't think that's true. And so, you know, often the argument that you'll hear is, you know, length doesn't equate to quality. And I agree with that. I agree that short games don't mean a game is bad. But I also think that just because a game is long doesn't mean it's bad. And I think a lot of people tend to take the argument of, like, length doesn't equal quality to the end of, yeah, a shorter game, like a 2-hour game. That doesn't mean it's bad. It can still be a great experience. Whereas, you know, a game, you know, let's 500 hours, a lot of people will start to have negative opinions about that game because it's just too long, which I find interesting. Because, like, I think that makes sense in the context of if you think of completing a game as, like, a job, like, I need to complete this game. But if you're just in a game playing, having fun, you don't have to play 500 hours. The way I kind of see it is, like, it'll be there for you if you ever want to go back to it, and there will basically always be things for you to play for years. So I think that's a good thing. That being said, with that much content in the game, a lot of it is bound to be repetitive. A lot of it is bound to be probably not so good as, you know, other things, but I think that's okay. I mean, it just depends on what content is in there. Is it 500 hours of good content or 20 hours of really great content and 480 hours of stuff? So, I mean, it all depends, but I just went on a complete rant.
No, that's fine. I mean, would you say it makes sense? You know, quality over quantity. And when you hear 500 hours to complete a game, you're like, I don't have 500 hours in my life to dedicate to this one game. There's a bunch of games coming out that I want to play. I'm not going to be able to do this. And for some people, they feel like they have to finish their game. Like, if I don't finish this, I didn't get my money's worth. Personally, I don't like when games are too long. because eventually I'm like, I've seen this before. You're dragging it. You're dragging it out. You're padding things. Your world is not that complex and it's not that interesting. And I kind of give out on a game. I've done it with plenty of games. RPGs are slightly different because they at least send you to different places and you see different stuff until they start repeating creatures. But I played Dying Light 1 and I didn't really care for it a whole lot. I felt that it really did get monotonous. And so when I hear 80 hours for side quests and stuff, because I do enjoy doing side quests, 80 hours to do side quests, 500 to complete everything, I'm like, wow, yeah, I don't have 80 hours to dedicate to your game. So yeah, I'm good. I that kind of killed any hope that I had for the game. Was like, well, they're taking the time with this one. They're definitely pushing the game further than just a parkour. And I was like, well, it's going to be interesting to see. But after this, I'm like, geez, I didn't even finish your first game. Now you're telling me there's going to be much more in a second? No, I'm good. So I checked out on that one.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that goes back to just kind of what I was saying. Like, if the content is good, then, you know, but it all depends on, you know, preference and, you know, if you want to put in 80 hours or so into a game. I don't know. I think a lot of people start to take up arms on Twitter after, like, a lot of people did after this announcement, saying, you know, like, kind of attacking the game for it. And that's kind of why I said what I said. But I think the developers could have probably communicated it a little bit better. I don't know. It's a news story that I don't know if it necessarily needs to be a news story in that sense. Like, to me, I don't see it as a big deal either way. Like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. So speaking on that, when is a game too long? Because I think the last game people complained was too long was The Last of Us 2, which I didn't play, despite the point that I loved the first one. So we're about done with our stories of the week. But before we do that, I want to ask about your ideal game length. I know some people have 100 plus hours. Some people like myself would like a shorter game experience because, man, I don't want to dedicate my entire life to one game. I kind of want to play a game, have fun, and move on. So, Riley, in your mind, when is a game too long?
Yeah, I don't have any number to set on it, but I think a game is too long when it outstays its welcome. Basically, the moment when I don't want to keep playing it or when it feels like a slog, that's when it's too long. For example, I have been playing Guardians of the Galaxy, and I really enjoyed about the first 3/4 of the game, but now that I'm reaching the end game stuff, it is becoming a slog, and you can tell that they're just going to certain places to kind of pad out the playtime, and I'm like, okay, I just want to get to the end. If I ever feel like that, if I ever feel like I want to be done with a game while I'm playing it, then it's too long. You know, Guardians of the Galaxy is only about 15 to 20 hours in length. And that's not long. That's on the shorter, very shorter end of games nowadays, but it's a little bit too long because I don't think they paced out the beginning, the middle, and like the first half of the ending really well. And now it's sort of feeling like a slog to me. So I've stopped playing it. I might go back because I do want to see where that story goes, but you know, and I've played other games, a game that I'll talk about in my next segment, where I have put in, I just hit over 104 hours last night in my playtime on it, over 4 years of that game being out, and I'm gonna play it, you know, I've been wanting to play it, like, you know, and that's a game that has constantly been drawing me back, so it just depends.
Yeah, and I think that's the hardest thing to actually, like, pin down is when a game is too long, because of course it's all prefaces based on the player themselves. For me, you know, I've had plenty of games that I really, really enjoyed that were short, and I've even had games that I really, really enjoyed that was, you know, a little long. That played for like 50-60 hours. Like, there were some RPGs that I was like, man, this is really fun. I'm really loving these characters and the world and so forth and so on. But yeah, I agree with you. When it feels like your game is purposely trying to pad itself out by having long walking segments or having waves of enemy for no real reason, I start to feel like you ran out of ideas. You're just trying to push things out for length rather than tell your story and end it. I'd rather have a game that has a beginning, middle, and end. When I feel like the game has a beginning and everything else is the middle, I start losing interest in the end. So yeah, for me, it does vary. It's all about gameplay. If your game is fun to play, I can stay there 50 hours. Sure, I can do 20 plus hours. I can do maybe 80. But if you start getting real repetitive, like if you go full blown Ubisoft Assassin's Creed, trash everywhere, pick up every little thing, yeah, I'm going to completely lose interest because you're just padding stuff out. And I hate that. I hate grinding like that. Just make it fun.
Yeah. I also think that with video games, with a lot of types of video games, it's hard to say when you're done with a game. Because, you know, in the game that I'm going to be talking about in the next segment, I rolled credits, but I'm not done with it, right? And with narrative games, it's a little bit easier to understand that. Like, with a narrative game like Guardians of the Galaxy, it's done when credits roll, basically, because that's when the story is. But gameplay-focused games, when are those done, you know? And I argue they're done when you stop playing them. Like, you don't have to complete every game. You don't have to dedicate your life to every game. Even if there's, like, with Dying Light 2, there's 500 hours. I think if you get a good, like, 10, 15, 20 hours out of that story, it's worth, you know, what you paid for it, even if you don't do the other, you know, 480 hours of stuff that they have for you. So, yeah, it just depends, I think.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so before we wrap up, Riley, how about you carry on to our last segment that you've been aching to talk about?
So let's get into what have we been playing. I think I'll start just because I've been hinting at it kind of heavily. So the main two things that I've been playing are Guardians of the Galaxy. I have been playing that. Although, like I mentioned, I've kind of fallen off of it, but I expect to go back and finish it sometime. And the other thing that I've been playing, after our discussion last week about Triangle Strategy and why I was excited for that game, I decided to get back into playing Octopath Traveler. And like I said, like I hinted at, I did roll credits. I finished the last two of the eight Travelers Chapter 4 stories, which is not the complete ending of the game. There's still a lot of stuff to do. There's still a lot of equipment to get, a lot of end game equipment. And spoiler alert for like a 4-year-old game, there's different bosses, end game bosses that you can fight. So within the game, if you don't know anything about it, there's 8 different jobs, one for each different traveler that you have. And eventually you find out that you can multi-class your jobs. So you can find certain shrines that give you the job of another one of your characters that you can put on a different character. For instance, Hanet is a hunter. If you go to one of the temples, you can find the job of the hunter and have somebody other than Hanet also be a hunter. But even closer to endgame, you find out that there are 4 additional secret jobs that none of the characters have. You have to fight a big end game boss to get those. And then when you're done with that, there's a big overarching villain that's super hard. The one thing that I've been kind of struggling with or trying to figure out how I'm going to do is end game leveling, because I think that's kind of where the game kind of doesn't shine, is their end game leveling is like really, really tough. The grind is really, really long. And they probably could have done more to accommodate that, in my opinion. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. How about you, Michael?
Well, let me answer that with a question. Riley, have you played Battlefield?
I have.
Have you played Battlefield 2042?
Yeah, I have.
How do you enjoy Battlefield 2042?
I had fun with it for maybe the first week and then could just stop playing it.
Well, don't worry. Like you, I have as well, and still have so many others. In fact, so much so, I've actually been playing Battlefield 4 again. Yeah, 2042 has upset me so much that I went back to play Battlefield 4. And guess what? It's fun. I know. Yeah. It's really weird that such an old game is fun. I tried playing Battlefield 1. No, not 1. 5 again. And it's like, yeah, no, I don't like this like at all. So, yeah, Battlefield 4 was the last good Battlefield, in my opinion. So that's what I've been playing again. I forgot how much fun that game was. I was like, wow, Battlefield 4 launched in a poor state as well. So yeah. Hopefully, eventually, 2042 can match up to that, since it's a return to the roots and a love letter to the player base. Because, man, Battlefield 5 and 1 was garbage. I hate those games. Well, I wouldn't say hate, but I really dislike them. But yeah, I've gone back to playing Battlefield 4. Riley, has a new game ever made you so mad you had to go back and play the older games in order to feel better?
I can't think of any examples of that. I'm sure that's a thing, but I know what you're talking about. Like, I remember playing Battlefield 4 and really enjoying it, but to be honest, like, even Battlefield 4 kind of disappointed me when it came out from where, like, the heights of how good Battlefield 3 was. You know, I can totally see where you're coming from.
Yeah, me and so many others, because the lobbies are still pretty full. So yeah, I've actually had no problem. I've had an easier time getting into games in Battlefield 4 than I have in 2042.
So, yeah.
Yeah,
that's insane.
it really is. All right. So what are we working on and where can we find you, Riley?
Yeah, I'm not working on much. I'm just working on this show. You can find me on Twitter at @Logue_Riley. That's at @Logue_Riley. Yeah. That's it.
As for me, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I will actually be going to a convention. And I will not be here on Thursday. So I've asked Riley to step in for me, which she has done. Thank you, Riley, for that. And I'll be there as a photographer. And other than that, no, that's all I'm doing, other than going back and playing the old Battlefields. But you can find me on Twitter at @M_MOSLEY_JR. If you find a weirdo in the Fox hoodie, congratulations, you are in the right place. Alright, so before we sign off for this episode, don't forget to join our Discord. That is still up and running. You can find a link in the description. You can also check out our other podcast, Nerds Talk Movies, where the last episode of Nerds Talk Movies, Tristan and Tyler had a spoiler talk on The Matrix Resurrections. Oh my goodness. That's another thing that's been blowing up on my Twitter timeline. I still haven't watched that one either. So if you've seen the movie and or you want to hear our experts talk about it, and I like that they put experts in quotes and quotations. That's awesome. So be sure to check that out. And finally, check out thenerdstash.com for all sorts of news coverage in the world of gaming, movies, television, and more. Along with this, the Nerd Stash has a lot of other content like engaging reviews and entertaining opinion pieces. There are quite a few hot takes floating around there, so it's not like if you went on Twitter and saw what people were saying about Resurrection. Man, oh man, that's rough. All right, so I want to thank Riley for joining me and for, again, taking over for me next week. It was supposed to be her week off, but we're going to switch spots. So Riley will be here on the 20th. And I will take her spot on the 27th. We want to thank you all for listening in, whether it's your first time or your 600th time or episode 89 times. And we'll be back next week to talk about more gaming news.